This is Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair, welcoming you to the December edition of WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. On the first Friday of every month, I'm joined by the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. We explore a topic of environmental importance. This month, Lisa Wozniak and I are going to look into Asian carp, its expanding territories, and growing threat to the health and well-being of the world's greatest freshwater resource. It's the Great Lakes. Lisa Wozniak, good morning, and welcome back to WEMU.
Good morning, David. A pleasure to be here.
And with each installment of First Friday, Lisa and I welcome in an expert to help us explore the issue. Lisa?
Our guest today is Tim Eder, Executive Director of the Great Lakes Commission. Tim has more than 25 years of experience advocating for the Great Lakes and Michigan's freshwater. At the Great Lakes Commission, Tim represents the freshwater interests of 8 Great Lakes states and 2 Canadian provinces and works to further a strong Great Lakes ecosystem and economy for the entire region. Given that the Great Lakes region is the 4th largest economy in the world, this is an extremely tall order and a very important task. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Wow, thanks for that great introduction, Lisa. David, it's good to be here.
Well, you do a very important job, Tim, and we're delighted to have you on the show.
Well, thanks.
In recent months, we've heard reports that Asian carp are progressing in their march towards the Great Lakes. We were told in early November that the carp are not only in tributaries of the Great Lakes watershed, but that the carp are now potentially reproducing in bodies of water where we did not think that possible. Truly, from your perspective and your expertise, what is the status?
Well, you know, there are 4 different species of Asian carp. There's the the big head, the silver. The silver are the famous ones that we see on the YouTube
jumping out of the water.
Exactly. And then there's the black and the grass carp. And the grass carp are the ones that have been discovered in Lake Erie. They're very serious. They're a real problem. They devour grass, as their name implies. But I'm not really certain about this, but I don't think they're nearly as threatening as the silver and the bighead. I think the silver and bighead would be worse. But we're frankly not sure about that. This is kind of like one big experiment that we're hoping not to experience.
The possibility is that they'll go along the edges of Lake Erie and into the tributaries and eat all the grasses along the edge and perhaps eat away at the embankments, causing further erosion and thus environmental issues.
Exactly. Well, they're a very serious threat. I know the duck hunters are very worried about them, as well they should be. Anglers, fisher people are concerned about the impacts on habitat. So they're a major concern.
Isn't the bigger issue, though, the fact that they are reproducing, they are moving, and that may indicate that the silverhead and the bighead carp are the ones that can also come up these tributaries and make it into the lakes?
Right. However, the silver and the bighead have to get in, and there has been DNA detected, but they haven't been able to establish that silver or bighead are reproducing anywhere in the Great Lakes. The DNA shows up, and there are a variety of theories of how the DNA could get there other than live fish. You know, my opinion is that where there's DNA, there's probably a fish, but they're clearly not present in populations sufficient to reproduce.
What does that mean other than the fish present themselves? How does the DNA get transported?
Boy, there's a variety of theories, and we could spend a lot of time talking about that, so let's not.
But
they could come up in on barges, on boats, from birds that eat them and the birds' feces and a number of different pathways.
So in November, early November, in response, I think, in part to the finding of the grass carp and other things, there was a letter sent on behalf of 16 U.S. senators. It was a pretty stern letter. To the Army Corps of Engineers, urging them to identify a solution that would not only maintain the commerce, enhance and not degrade the water quality, and permanently safeguard the Great Lakes from Asian carp and other invasive species. They suggest that we need to reduce the risk by moving quickly. What does that really mean? I mean, what can the Corps do at this point?
Well, first of all, you need to recognize that the fact that 16 senators from both sides of the aisle, conservatives, liberals, Democrats, Republicans, signed on to anything is significant. Symbolically, this is huge.
Kicks up the sense of urgency, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And what they said to the Corps of Engineers was, Corps of Engineers, you have a major study coming out that's going to be released in January. In it, the Corps of Engineers is not going to recommend a solution to this problem of the connection points between the Mississippi and the Great Lakes watersheds.
Wasn't that the initial purpose of financing the report?
Exactly. Yes, it was. And what happened was, we, Senator Stabenow and others, got the Corps of Engineers to accelerate their study. They were on a timetable to not get their project done until 2015 or 2016. So Congress gave them an order and said, hurry up, get it done. We can't wait. This is urgent. So they got it done early on a faster timetable, but they're not going to complete the job. They're not going to give us a recommendation.
So it'll be an analysis of the situation with no suggestions about how we actually remedy things.
Well, there will be 7 or 8 different potential solutions, but they won't make a recommendation.
You are listening to 89.1 WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm David Fair, alongside my co-host for this monthly segment, Lisa Wozniak. Lisa is the executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. We're talking Asian carp with our guest, Tim Eater. And Tim is the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission. So they're not going to make a specific recommendation. They're going to send a series of possibilities into the political abyss that is Congress.
Exactly. And that's why this letter from the 16 senators is so important. We need the region, actually, as a region, the states, the governors, the members of Congress need to come together, find consensus, and give the Corps direction on what solution they want the Corps to actually implement.
So without a permanent separation of the waterways in an immediate future, what are the potential interim measures as suggested by this letter that could be taken right now? What are interim measures?
Well, there are interim measures that are being explored. There are things like treating water that goes through the locks so that you could maintain shipping. One possibility is that you could use chlorine or some other chemical agent to actually kill the life in the water that goes through the lock. That's obviously fraught with difficulty. We don't really want to create kill zones in our rivers. But that's the type of interim approach. Putting in barriers in some sections of the Chicago waterway. Chicago is ground zero for where this is most important because it's where the permanent connection between the Lake Michigan and the Illinois-Mississippi River system. So putting in a partial barrier, there's 5 different parts of the Chicago waterway system that connect to the Great Lakes. You could put a barrier in 1 or 2 of them and while you're moving and using other technologies to address the other points of connection.
So over time, over these past few years, there's been approximately $200 million invested in measures to shield the lake waters from the carp. Among those various different technologies that have been experimented with, are there ones that have been found to be more successful than others as we wait for this final solution to the problem?
They're all in the testing phase. Even the electric barrier, most people are aware of the fact that there's an electric fence, basically, in the Chicago waterway. That's been tested, and there's backup and redundant systems. It's been tested on other species, but the thing about it is that the Asian carp are not up against that electric barrier, so we don't know with certainty that it will work. We think it will. It's been tested, but we don't know for sure.
But that canal in Chicago along the Mississippi River Basin in Lake Michigan has a history of power outages and, in fact, wasn't turned up to a voltage strong enough to even repel juvenile fish until 2011. So there is the possibility that natural conditions will take over and allow the passage of the fish into the lakes.
And for that very reason, the most expeditious and efficient and most important solution is separating the watersheds between putting a barrier that separates Lake Michigan from the Illinois-Mississippi system.
We will talk about this barrier. Our conversation about Asian carp and the Great Lakes continues. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. My co-host for the segment is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, Lisa Wozniak. And our guest this morning, once again, is Tim Eater. He is Executive Director of the Great Lakes Commission. The barrier to creating a barrier seems to be money and will.
Well, exactly. It's not an inexpensive proposition. And the reason for that, David, is because a city of 4 million people depends on that waterway for not only transportation, which might even be one of the minor uses, but more importantly, for water quality, for movement of the wastewater, and for flood protection. You know, you've got the entire region's plumbing, which is built up around that water flowing the wrong direction, down to St. Louis, down the Mississippi River. So to reverse that, to put in a barrier and reverse that, is a tremendous engineering proposition.
How would separating the waterways affect Michigan's, and I'm thinking in a very Michigan-centric way, water-driven economy, our fishing industry, our shipping industry, tourism, a la pure Michigan?
You know, I'm not really sure that it would have an impact on Michigan's waterway transportation industry. I think the biggest economic impact is it would provide protection for the Great Lakes fishery.
And that is a $7 billion a year industry?
Generates about $7 billion in economic activity every year.
To create the barrier, how many billions of dollars and how many years are we talking?
Well, we did a study that was released 2 years ago, and we documented that it would cost around $4 billion over a 20-year period to construct the barrier. The barrier is one of the least expensive parts of it, but to re-engineer the plumbing to deal with flood protection and water quality issues and transportation issues to mitigate all of those changes would cost in the neighborhood of $4 billion.
Based on those figures, we have to really think long term, don't we? That as expensive as it might be to create this barrier, it would be far more expensive in the long term to allow the fish to take over the Great Lakes.
Well, you think about it, a $4 billion one-time investment is a lot of money, but it wouldn't be plunked down immediately. We wouldn't have to make the payment in 2015. It would be spread out over the construction period of 20 years or so. And you compare that to a sport fishery that generates on the order of $7 billion in economic activity every single year. So that provides some perspective. You know, we've spent big money on some other public works projects. O'Hare Airport was far more than $4 billion. The Chicago Waterway itself, in today's dollars, was more than $4 billion. It was more on the order of $11 billion. Of course, that was back at the turn of the 20th century, 100 years ago, but in today's dollars, that was a more expensive project than what we're talking about here.
So let me ask you this. Given that Asian carp are now making up between 80 and 90% of fish populations in some Illinois waterways, it would seem that Michigan is more concerned about managing the carp than perhaps other places. Are there watersheds that are letting the carp off the hook, so to speak?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think that there are many states that are really concerned and are really stepping it up to prevent Asian carp from moving in. Minnesota is really concerned about the Mississippi River outside of the Great Lakes region up in the Twin Cities. They're talking about closing locks there. Kentucky is really concerned. Ohio, Pennsylvania, outside of the Great Lakes region, even though they're Great Lakes states, their parts of the Ohio River outside of the Great Lakes region are seeing the first waves of infestation, and they're really stepping it up because they're very concerned.
It's good to know. And I think many citizens in Michigan in particular are really concerned not only about the Great Lakes, but are really interested and worried about how far up inland rivers the carp will be able to spread should they establish themselves here. Is that something that you've mapped or even, you know, considered in your analysis at the commission?
Well, we haven't really studied that. We know that the most important places of where the invasion would take place would be in the shallow estuaries and bays, like places like Western Lake Erie, Saginaw Bay, and the mouths of tributaries. Those are the places that would be most hospitable to Asian carp if they did get loose. I know Minnesota is very concerned about their land of 10,000 lakes, and that's why they're so concerned in taking the actions that they are. So, yes, I think our inland lakes would be at risk, but I think the tributaries and the shallow bays would be the first place of invasion.
What, if anything, have we learned about management of sea lampreys and zebra mussels that might apply to our ability to manage and control the levels of Asian carp in Michigan waters, be it the Great Lakes or in our inland rivers and tributaries and lakes?
Well, I think, David, the first thing that we've learned is that prevention is the first and most important strategy that we should employ at all costs. Because once the fish get in, it's the proverbial toothpaste out of the tube. You can't get rid of them. You have to manage them. And in the case of sea lamprey, they wiped out the lake trout fishery, made extinct lake trout populations in Lake Superior and Lake Michigan. We've brought them back now through careful management and control, but we spend on the order of $20 million per year managing sea lamprey. In the case of zebra mussels, there is no management. We just watch them and clean out the pipes that they clog up and watch them spread. That's basically our management approach. There's just not much that we can do.
And that's horribly expensive, too.
Well, it is expensive. It's had a severe impact on drinking water intake pipes, power plants intake pipes, And it's changed the ecology. That's the most important thing. This is like a grand experiment that we're undertaking in the Great Lakes region. The zebra mussels have and quagga mussels have dramatically changed the food web in the Great Lakes. And we're watching, and frankly, even the best scientists don't completely understand what's coming next because of mussels.
You are listening to 89.1 WEMU, and this is WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm David Fair with my co-host Lisa Wozniak of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, and today we're talking with Tim Eater. Tim is the Executive Director of the Great Lakes Commission, and we're talking Great Lakes and Asian carp.
What has the Great Lakes Commission's role been throughout this process?
Well, we represent the states and the provinces, so we are all about trying to get the states and provinces to speak with a common voice and to come to consensus around what the solution should be. And the states that are my board of directors authorized us to undertake this study of separation, and we documented that it's feasible, it's possible, it could be done for, you know, not cheaply. It's going to cost a lot of money.
And it is the method you favor.
And it's the method that we favor. Now, with the Corps of Engineers report coming out in January, we again have to get the states and provinces together to find consensus on which one of the options in the Corps' report we want them to go forward with, or whether we want to pursue interim solutions, or whether we want them to pursue something more like what's in our report. We don't know what's going to be in the Corps' report exactly. But we think there will be separation options that are included, similar to what we documented in our report 2 years ago.
There seems to be a majority opinion, if not consensus, that perhaps in moving forward, the Army Corps of Engineers is probably not the organization in which to deal with this.
Well, the Corps is important. They play a really important role, and they are, you know, they are the nation's engineers, water resource engineers. The Corps, it has some difficulties, there's no doubt about it. They're very expensive, and they're not quick. But they do good work, and in this case, they're playing a really important role.
And they may want out, too, at the conclusion of this study.
They might. This has been a huge undertaking for the Corps of Engineers. There are other agencies that may well play a role and may do a better job, may be more well-suited. Local organizations like the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District in Chicago, even the City of Chicago, State of Illinois, could step up, and there could be a role for them to play in actually implementing the solution.
For the thousands and thousands of citizens across the state who are concerned about the livelihood of the fishing industry and the quality of Michigan's fresh water, what do you advise them to do to advocate for the Great Lakes and against the Asian carp?
Well, advocacy is one thing, and there's no question about it that our elected officials need to continue to hear that this is an urgent problem. And, you know, both of our senators and most of our representatives have been really, really effective and good on this issue. But they need to be reinforced. They need to hear that message that this is important. But there are other things that can be done as well. I mean, for example, bait is one of the potential pathways that Asian carp could get in here other than the Chicago waterway. So anglers, when they buy bait, they can learn to identify Asian carp minnows. They're not supposed to be in our bait supply, but sometimes they get mixed up and they get in there. And so anglers, if they can learn how to identify their bait, they should, you know, kill the Asian carp if they do find them. So those are a couple of things that people can do.
Our time together is just about out, but I do want to ask this. The Army Corps of Engineer report comes out in early January. It then gets forwarded to Congress, who has to make some decisions and decide on a course of action. Do you have any clue as to how long that may take for them to evaluate the report and start moving forward?
Well, it's a tough one, David. You put your finger on it earlier when you referenced the Corps of Engineers turning this over to the abyss that is Congress. And that's why we, as the Great Lakes region, I'm not talking about the Great Lakes Commission, I'm talking about Lisa's organization and other conservation groups and our representatives and economic interests, the governors, we have to come to a conclusion, we have to come to a consensus on what that path forward is. And that's what we're going to be trying to lead the way on as we after January.
Tim, thank you so much for your time today. Truly grateful.
Thank you. Good to be here.
That is Tim Eder. He is Executive Director of the Great Lakes Commission. You've been listening to WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. My co-host for the segment is Lisa Wozniak. Lisa is the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And Lisa, I'll see you in the new year.
I look forward to it, David.
Me too. I'm David Fair, and you are listening to Morning Edition on 89.1 WEMU.